Welcome to the Lesbo and the Bean universe. Lesbo and the Bean. LATB. Lat B. Where mixed martial arts and the UFC get silly. Big silly. Buckle up and move your tray tables to their upright position. And please, somebody shut that baby up. It's time for Lesbo and the Bean.
Welcome back. Episode 130. Recap of Kansas. We were on a break. We needed some fights.
It wasn't
fights.
In Kansas.
Oh, I mean Lincoln, Nebraska. Sorry.
Some old middle of the white people country.
Yeah, it was all such
racist.
It's all the heartland. But we ended up
somewhere
having...
where they pray to Jesus and eat potatoes.
It was quite a show for a good break. What a comeback. We had knockouts, submissions, arms being twisted the other way. It was one of the funner fight nights we've had in a while. One of the potential rounds of the years to come. Yuri Alcantara versus... who was it?
Yuri Alcantara versus Sam Hagen.
Sam Hagen. God, that elbow still haunts me. Still, I know multiple people who left the room and never came back to the fight night.
I didn't.
After watching that, they were just like, ooh, his arm. He kept punching. But before all that, we had another fight announced. We have Tony Ferguson versus Anthony Pettis officially on the books. Tony already being weird as shit. Tweeting out some weird ass shit, but what a fight for Pettis. That's a big step up.
I have a question because, you know, obviously you know more history of the UFC.
Sure, sure.
Am I wrong on remembering that Anthony Pettis has been mocked in the past for not being Spanish or not speaking Spanish? Or is there a UFC fighter that has been mocked for not being Spanish enough but is of Spanish descent of somewhere?
Yeah, there's been a couple.
Is it Pettis or no?
I think yes, because he's not really good at speaking Spanish, or he's not the best. The Bean himself isn't the greatest at Spanish as well either, but I think that's Latinos. Because if they can find a way to get one up on you, like most haters,
well, that's
they'll
what
talk
I was saying.
Shit on
is
you.
That what Tony Ferguson's tweet is all about? Was he calling him, like, was... I just never seen Tony really get all...
Speak Spanish either, right?
He seems like he was dogging him a little bit, like calling, like...
The Latino-ness, but they're both... One's Puerto Rican, isn't he? And the other one's Mexican. Tony's...
That there already. There is race on...
That's what I'm saying, so I already know
so
because...
There's against Puerto Ricans and Mexicans that I know.
My Spanish isn't the best, but I've had people be like, oh, your Spanish ain't that good, but I'm like, whoa... My English is pretty good, though, right?
You're like, oh, I'm sorry, I speak two languages.
Yeah, for reals. For reals.
Like, oh, sorry.
My bad. But that's the way it goes. Either way, there was a bunch of other fights announced over the weekend.
I am so excited that Tony Ferguson's coming back. I am a little bummed just because I do think he deserves a bigger fight than this. In my opinion, he's still my champion. We talked about it a little last night. And he's won more fights in the UFC than Khabib, who everybody talks about. Khabib. And Connor's more my champion than Khabib. Khabib beat Aya Quinta for his belt. That makes zero sense to me. Tony Ferguson beating Kevin Lee for a belt. Interim makes
much
more
relevant. I think you make an outstanding point, and that's been a lot to Khabib's career, fighting Daryl Horcher short notice. And most of the guys he's fought are short notice guys who fall out, and it's just what a fight we have coming
so
up shortly.
Do you think it's smart that he's taking... Do you think it's a warm-up fight for Tony?
I think Tony, because of the injury, he's just kind of thrown back in there, and he can choose to wait another year and a half to 2 years, or get paid again. Because that's what's happening with all of these mega fights. These guys aren't fighting every 3 months. Connor's been out for 2 years. Khabib fights every 3 years, or short notice fighters in between then.
Yeah, he's fought two times in the last year, but then before that
big
he was
breaks,
falling out.
Exactly. So I think that's the division. I think that's what it is. And I think Tony at his
division.
Age
okay.
needs
and the
fight when
he
needs
division,
to.
We'll talk more about it when we get there. Because we do have your boy and not Eric Anders.
Some turmoil in the lightweight division. Still some big changes that happened in Nebraska. Starting off, the fight card, though, was Hani Yahya versus, who was his opponent, Sanders. a lot of people had Yaha slide favorite, and Yaya went in there directly for the heel hooks. I think it was in about 2 minutes, ended up finishing Sanders. Sanders is on a 3-fight losing, maybe got a win in there, but lost to quite a few people now in a division that has trouble. Yaya, if he does that to a lot of other guys, I'm going to keep picking him because he is the black belt ace on the ground.
What do you think his call out of TJ Dillashaw? He says he's on a 3-fight streak and nobody else is on that in his division.
I'd agree with that, but his 3-fight streak are on the border of top 15 guys compared to TJ Dillashaw fighting top 5 world champions. It's too much of a step up. It makes sense that Yaya's going to call him out.
If he doesn't get TJ Dillashaw, I don't really know where that puts him in the rankings, but he should get the number one contender at this point. So if TJ's fighting Cejudo, Marias, or Dominic Cruz, one of those fights TJ will fight next. So what if Dominic Cruz or Marlon Marais aren't part of that? I think it's okay if Ani Yaya fights one of those guys.
I'm going to be putting a lot of money on TJ if that fight gets put on. I'll tell you that much real quick.
Well, I mean, if TJ fights Cejudo.
Oh, right,
him
right,
fighting either Dominic Cruz or Marlon Moraes. For, like, you don't need to what make an interim.
What does it say, though, that when you talk about the division, you can only talk about people outside of the weight classes?
Marlon Moraes, Dominic Cruz, and Dillashaw are all in Hani Yaya's division.
At 135? Oh, didn't you say Cejudo as well?
Well, that's who TJ is talking about fighting.
Right, right, next.
So I'm saying if TJ fought Cejudo, then that would free up either Dom or Marlon Moraes. So whoever people consider being the contender, I think either one of those fights is good for Hani Yaya.
I'd like to see it. I don't think that Yaya, I think he needs a couple more wins to get up in that level because, again, he beat somebody who is bordering being in the UFC right now in Sanders. Sanders is on a 2-fight losing streak to other mid-tier guys. I just think it makes sense for him to call it out. I just don't see it. I don't think
every single guy that, as they were walking in the octagon, Luke Sanders is the first that comes to mind. He was feeling himself far too hard. If they look like they just stared in the mirror the whole time, he had his braids done just right, he had his bandana. No, I have to refold it. No, I have to refold it. Perfect. Oh, I'm setting my bandana perfect. And I'm walking out and he was feeling himself so much like he was not in the moment of a fight. He was more worried about the way he looked and you could almost see he was going to lose the fight going in. And it wasn't the only time during this fight night that I said aloud, he's feeling himself too much. He's going to lose this fight quickly.
We need to get some live bets going somehow and then make some cash out on those. Yeah, right?
On the walk-in, but usually they stop the...
Yeah, the betting lines right around. Right as Bruce Buffer's usually announcing the fight is when they stop the betting line. So you got a minute or two in between there if you're following us on Twitter. Then we had Drew Dober getting a unanimous decision over John Tuck. A lot of people saw this coming, decided favorite for Dober. Dober, again, got that leg game, got that cardio, all around good guy, doesn't really stick out anywhere. John Tuck, in that same boat, but worse. I don't
John
know where
Tuck
we go from there.
Feeling himself too hard when he was walking in bandana, folded just right. Walking in, thinking about how I look so hard, so hard. He was one of the guys that I was actually surprised. Oh, John Tuck doesn't look as bad as I thought he was going to. Coming into this. Because this went to decision or was
this went to decision.
Yeah.
But there was times in there where Dober was just... It was 30-27 easily. Drew Dober landed the takedowns, landed ground and pound on stop. Elbows bouncing all off of Tuck's head. But Dober was the one bleeding the entire fight. He ended up getting
Tuck
cut early
bigger
on.
Bigger than ever before.
Interesting. I thought Dober looked good too. Super
thick. He looked
thick.
The same as he always looks.
Yeah.
Thick
yeah,
as
yeah,
hell.
Yeah. Then we ended up having JoJo Calderwood defeating Faria, the big underdog, via triangle. What I didn't like was how easily Faria got Calderwood on the ground, but Calderwood did get a triangle in there and finish it with only a second to spare at 4 minutes and 57 seconds. I didn't like... She was losing that round off of her back, but obviously ended up turning it out with that beautiful triangle. Calderwood... Still super tentative. There was a point in time where I was like, if this goes to decision and Faria does this for 3 rounds, this is how she loses a decision. But luckily, those long legs came through. How'd you feel about it? Because she was losing up until she won in Calderwood.
Yeah. That seems to when you're trying to submit someone and that's your game plan, that usually is what the fight looks like. Until
you're giving it away,
I don't know if that was her game plan or if it was just happenstance.
Right, you get what you take.
JoJo. So, I don't know what happens with Joanne Calderwood from here.
Still going to be tentative on that one. Then we went to 170 pounds where Mickey Gall submitted George Sullivan in 1 minute. And here, the Bean was definitely saying that Sullivan deserved a little bit more respect. I didn't necessarily pick him, but I didn't think he was going to be blown out as quickly as it was. And did he get blown out by Mickey Gall, who I still think is not that good of a fighter. It's just Sullivan's that shot as well. I didn't have Sullivan on much, but the cards I did have him on totally did stink up the night. So, unfortunately, Sullivan didn't plan out on the DK. Hopefully, he didn't put money on him, because I didn't.
I did a little. He ruined a couple of my cards just because he was so cheap.
He was
cheap. You needed like one or two. There were so many expensive fighters.
Yep.
You needed one or two cheap guys. So I listened to Lesbo and the Bean and I thought, maybe he won't get finished. Mickey Gall doesn't look that great. And then it did not look like a black belt. He did not look like a black belt.
Yeah, on the ground, Sullivan looked really old and stiff in there. At 37, 38 years old,
it was so long fast. Camps, it was like 1 minute and 7 seconds.
He didn't even. Sullivan is going to be a big, big fade from here on out. That think Gall, though, is going to be some high prospect his next fight.
Well, he's being smart again about his call outs, and he called out either Sage Northcutt or Diego Sanchez. Those are two winnable fights for him. One that he's going to run back me and Sage, because maybe Sage wants the fights and that he knows Alpha Male has enough pull that they can get him whatever he wants. And they can get on one of these next big two cards, 229 or 230, which every fighter is trying to get on right now.
You're going to get paid.
Diego Sanchez is like, so, see, even Gall knows I'm going to win my next fight. So when I win, then maybe we'll do that. And I'm like, I didn't even know Diego Sanchez had a fight coming up.
Oh, I'm going to be making so much money against Diego Sanchez, unfortunately. And it's going to be at his expense. UFC needs to protect these fighters from themselves at times. And Diego Sanchez is one of those guys for me. Unfortunate. And what's he going to fight at? Heavyweight? Where's Diego going to fight at? Light heavyweight? Because he'll take a fight anywhere.
Isn't Diego Sanchez smaller than Mickey Gall by significant, like
155 pounds?
Yeah.
Compared to Gall's.
But Gall wants to fight at 155. That's where I was wondering if it's like his attempt to try to get to go down.
He said he can make the weight. He's made the trial weight before.
I think he can too, and I think Mickey Gall at 155, whole different monster.
He'll beat Diego Sanchez at 155, who's a weak guy.
I think he'll be better, though. I think he'd be a lot better at 155.
He's a tall guy. He's a tall guy.
If he can make it comfortably, because to me he looks a little soft compared to the other fighters in the UFC. So I feel like he could make 155 comfortably.
Totally. Then we went on to the 185-pound division where Andrew Sanchez beat Marcus Perez. We both here had Perez. This was my first wrong one of the night. Perez ended up just gassing even quicker than Sanchez, throwing one and two punch strike combinations, throwing some spinning elbows in there, but Sanchez really kept a good game plan together, used his takedowns as well as striking to keep it where he wanted. Sanchez, I'm going to still be super tentative on. Perez, I'm going to still be super tentative on as well. I didn't like what I saw from either guy. Sanchez being one of those contender champions. He's one of the worst champions we've had out of the series in the near future, in the recent past. Even though he has all the credentials, a better guy with a little more gas tank and a little more pop than Perez is going to be able to get Sanchez out of there, because Sanchez ate some heavy shots from a very one-dimensional fighter to be in there.
Every single guy that's holding the belt right now, I think we've seen get knocked the fuck out.
It's the name of the game.
So maybe it's just part of the thing, taking your lumps and getting better. I honestly did not even remember picking this fight, and I didn't know what guy I picked. This is one of the first time I had to open my tap in the night, and I'm like, I don't even remember picking this. I don't even know who these guys are.
So it didn't even feel like a loss when you ended up going through.
No, I was like, I don't even remember. I was hoping I didn't pick it. I really didn't even, and it was the least watched fight for me.
I would agree with that, and I actually didn't expose myself at all on DraftKings, which really, really helped me out on the night to pick those guys that got the finishes. One of them being Sam Hagen. We talked about it earlier against Yuri Alcantara. Alcantara, though, still, as I was saying before, crafty mofo who will put you in really bad spots. It's whether that gas tank ends up going on throughout the night for him, and it did not after he ripped Sam Hagen's elbow apart. He pretty much gave up in at the beginning of the second round, ate another straight couple punches, went to the ground, and just pretty much huddled up. Alcantara starting to be a fade in there. Sam Hagen still looked good against an old vet with a lot of tricks in there.
I think Sam Hagen's one to watch. To stay alive like that, if he's double jointed like that, or did he break his elbow?
We're all double jointed like that. Which means, no, he broke it. Like, that arm is going to be in a sling for a couple days easy. And he even talked about
it. Just to be in a, if it's in a sling for a couple of days, that's worth it.
Well, I love the fighters.
How bad did he break it?
We're going to end up finding out. What I love in the post fight that I saw issues with him is he said once it popped, once he realized it popped and felt it popped, he said, well, I'm not going to tap now. It's already hurt. Like, my arm's already broken, so I'm just going
to
keep
me,
going.
But to me, tearing ligaments so much worse than break.
I don't want any of it. I would tap.
I understand, but a broken bone is a quicker heal than torn ligaments. And that's where...
We'll have to see what he says. But did you happen to catch that boxing match that was riveting over the weekend? Not the KS1 versus Logan. The actual one where the boxer came in, they touched gloves, and then one boxer walked right out of the ring.
He was like, I ain't doing
this. Yeah, I'm not doing this. He got in there up to the point and was like, later, homie.
That would be me if I could stand across from Cyborg.
That would be me against Alcantara. And Sam Hagen got his arm ripped off and was like, I want some more. Can I please have some more?
Paige Van Zandt, off topic. In my head, that moment, this is what all went through it. I was picturing that would be me staring across from Chris Cyborg. If I had to fight in the UFC, what would be my... Because then I thought Jessica I. That wouldn't be me staring across from Jessica I. And I thought, she'd probably beat me up for sure. And then I'm like, well, who would be my best shot? Maybe I'd be okay against Paige Van Zandt. Like, maybe that would be my best shot in the UFC. And then I was like, oh, Paige Van Zandt got a fight coming up in January.
Breaking! Talking about shots in midnight showers, we have Paige Van Zandt versus Ostovich in probably... one of the best fights we've seen in a long time.
Well, then Paige VanZant, hashtag fake news.
Hashtag fake boobs?
Yep.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah, I'm watching.
She said it was all fake news.
Yeah, I saw it was official.
Yeah, she said that's fake news, that she is starting training camp and she's hoping her arm's okay still. Like,
what? I already got ready for that fight. I've already been doing breakdowns on that fight, studying pictures and tape and everything.
Yeah.
So then we had Sam Hagen.
And for the record, I obviously would have Paige Van Zandt by submission round one.
Wow. Bold.
If I were to fight her.
Oh, it really?
Yeah. If I were to fight Paige, I would have Paige Van Zandt submission round one.
Okay. I like it. I love the confidence. I have a little more faith in you. But if you have to take one for the team, you got to take one for the team.
Most of the people out there, I think they're like, I would have submission Paige Van Zandt round one as well.
That's exactly what I'm saying. If you need me to step in for you and take a submission for Paige Van Zandt, I'm just saying, I hear you. We're on the same page. Van Zandt, you know what I'm saying. Then we went to one of the biggest underdogs that came
and she
through.
She isn't even my favorite. She just has all the tools.
She just got two of them put in. I know what you're saying. So then we went to one of the biggest underdogs of the night coming through. If you listen to the Bean, you're making some of that green. James Krause, big -250 underdog, or +250 underdog, coming in against Warley Alves. Alves, that gas tank, exactly as the Bean called it. That gas tank, after the first round was shot, those strikes were coming very, very looping. He was breathing hard, and Krause ate a couple and finally just put that knee right where he needed to. Worthy standing TKO, I honestly thought a little early, but because I had Krause, I wasn't crying about it. I was like, okay.
I had Krause as an under on a lot of my cards. So that was, well, It didn't go great by the end of the night. But at that time, when Krause won, I was very happy about
comfortable.
It. And it set me up for good things. But
main event ended up...
I don't even
up.
Know why. I really honestly think that's the first time in my whole life I picked Worley Atlas. I don't even know why. And I think it's the first time I ever picked against James Krause. It's really weird.
Krause is one of those guys that's got that Leslie Smith heart in there. Where he'll take a punch in and a beating in there.
I like let the MMA community sway me in that fight.
It happens. Sometimes you got to be a little against the grain. But... there's many fights to go. There's a lot of other spots, especially coming up. Not next weekend, the weekend after, in a fun one.
There's no fights next weekend?
There ain't no fights next weekend. We're going to have another little break, but then we get into a hell of a pay-per-view that we'll talk about later on.
Well, if we have a hell of a pay-per-view, are we going to need a double show for it?
No, I don't think so. No. I think we'll be able to cover it solidly because... I was barely looking into it. There's a few fun ones, but there's some that we'll be able to skim
through. Oh, it's not like 229.
Nah, it ain't no 229, but it's definitely a fun one to start off after another little short break. Anders coming in against Tim Williams. This was one of the most inflated DK lines we've seen in a long time, and Anders didn't pay off. Even though he got a finish, did not pay off.
Not only an inflated DK line. Have you ever seen a workup video like the Eric Anders video?
Minus 1,200 by closing lines. Eric Saunders was getting so much hype.
They played his whole entire Alabama career on before the game started. Before the fight started. I had to tell the people in the room, this is the guy that they did the workup about. And they were all like, oh, I didn't recognize him with that hair. Did he let his hair grow out? His hair did not look great.
Yeah, I agree. He definitely didn't look like himself in there.
I like how we always talk about the fashion stuff of it. But it matters.
It does matter. And other people pointed out because we can get a lot of technical breakdowns all over the place. You ain't going to get this side topic.
Yeah.
The good stuff. What really matters.
Eric Anders needs to go. I don't mind if he keeps the length on the top, but he needs a fade up the side. It looked just tired.
Why do I just think Eric Anders and freaking Greg Hardy? The guy who's still an amateur on the Contender Series. Because they both played football.
Yeah, we only need one.
Yeah, right?
We only
right?
need one.
Powerhouse.
But I think the UFC looks at it like... because he played for Alabama. So Roll Tide. Like that big whole contingency of Alabama fan. That's why they played that whole long commercial.
I don't know either. I'm not the biggest football guy in the world in there. You definitely got me on this MMA podcast because that's what I do for fun. But I do agree. We only need one football guy in here. And against Tim Williams, who came in biggest underdog in a long time, he was worth his weight in gold on DK points because even for 20 points at like 6,700, I didn't put him anywhere. But Anders, third round finish. For that type of a price, he needed to get him out of there in 10 seconds in order to pay it off.
And there was a couple of times that he was wobbled.
Good point. The corner of Anders after that first round was like, come on, dude, wake up. Wake up. And finally in the third round, Anders got it together in there. And the closest soccer kick I've ever seen in there, ever, Eric Anders, the hand, they're like, oh, look, the hand's right off the mat. I'm like, I don't know about that, but... I'll let somebody die in there tonight. I'll let someone die in there tonight
Damn,
if we have to.
That's a highlight reel forever.
Ever.
Even if Eric Anders never meets his potential. Because the football guys, if they're not rolling hard or wrestling also in school, they, just going in and being a great athlete at that point that they usually give up on football at is too late in life. I think Brennan Chaub, I know he did jiu-jitsu. I know he also did that in life. But he, like Joe Rogan said, like that elite level. And you can kind of see that. And you could see it against Williams in there. Like, oh, this is the difference between a guy who does MMA and a guy who played football.
Totally.
And like, but you could still have enough power to soccer kick anyone to their death, to their doom.
Totally. Someone else who got finished in there in the night was... John Moraga against Division Figueroa. This ended up finishing in the second round. Moraga, tough fight for anybody. Division showing us that he can put the fingers in the best of eyes. That dude was scraping the face as hard as anybody, but eventually put a good enough game plan together to get the crafty veteran out of there. I like Figueroa where he's going with this. I still think Moraga can beat a lot of other guys in here. This was a fun one, but was overshadowed by some higher performances throughout the night. I like both of these guys in the division. I think they're still fun. Many, many matchups for either one. Do you remember
much
about it?
I do, and this is one of those fights that, you know, usually when a guy loses, they say, if these guys fight 10 times, this guy wins 10 times. I don't think this is one of those fights. I think these are guys that could meet again 2 years from now, and it'd still be a great fight.
I'd agree with that.
We wouldn't know what way it would go. So, yeah, I like where both guys still going in the UFC. And was John Moraga, was he mad? Did he thought it was stopped a little early?
He was. But he got beat up in there pretty good. He was eating most of those shots, getting the worst of most of those exchanges, in my point of view.
Huh. I thought he was doing really well. I think I don't remember that fight that much.
No, that's what I'm saying. It was overshadowed by a couple other ones.
But I do think, I thought he was doing well. Like, did it go into the second round? He got finished in the second round?
Yep.
Yeah, I feel like he was winning the first round.
I could see that. I wouldn't be mad at either one of those guys winning the first round.
I didn't start scoring it on that new app we've been trying, Verdict, because it wasn't the main card
I
yet,
I did
right?
enjoy it. It was the main card, but we didn't get into it until the co-main event. I didn't start to play.
Oh, I did. Hold on. Dee, 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 dee.
But with Figueiredo, I think he moved up because Moraga was 10-14, still undefeated in the division. A lot of people are saying get him in there to the 125-pound belt against Cejudo right away. And I'm like, Moraga, he's still got a couple guys. He's got Joey B to fight in there for sure. Sergio Pettis has made a quiet run in the division. I think Figueiredo's one more fight away from that championship belt. Moraga, he's going to be set back, but not too far. He's getting out of
Oh, yeah, I didn't do
career.
It by the round either yet on this.
Not yet, but maybe the next one you didn't need to for sure, because we had Brian Barberina finishing off Jake Ellenberger in a quick 1 or 2 minutes and 26 seconds. Everyone saw this coming. It's more of a fade on Ellenberger than anything. Don't call Barberina a knockout puncher, because he ain't. You can tell me all you want for half an hour. He ain't a knockout guy. He's a grinder who can finish people that don't have chins anymore. Jake Ellenberger being one of those guys. But it was sad to see those gloves be put in the ring. But not really, because it's the best thing for Jake Ellenberger. Why does he need to get put to sleep like that? There's no reason. It's time for him to move on. And I'm liking seeing that change into the guard. Brian Barberina is going to have a long career on this. But do not put too much stock in here. Jake Ellenberger was not a worthy opponent, unfortunately, at this point of his MMA career.
Yeah, it was a good thing. I'm glad the rings or the gloves were put down.
Totally.
So
totally,
thank
totally.
You, Jake Ellenberger, and have an amazing retirement. And as far as what's his face go from here?
Barberina. Anybody? Because it doesn't
He's
do anything for him.
He's just a gatekeeper.
Exactly. The beating Ellenberger doesn't move him up anywhere in my eyes. Then we ended up going to a dirty split. Courtney Casey versus Angela Hill. Controversial fight. A lot of people thought that Angela Hill fought off enough takedowns and slightly won in the striking, where actually I believe Courtney Casey had 2 or 3 more strikes over the entire fight and 2 takedowns. Could have gone either way. I'm not angry with the Courtney decision. Even though I had Hill, this was one of the few ones I got wrong in the night. But I didn't put too much weight in it betting-wise and or my DK-wise. So it didn't affect me all that much because we knew what we were getting here.
Same. I actually agreed with the judges and felt like Angela just quite didn't do enough to pull it down in the takedowns there. I think there was a takedown in 2 of the rounds that just cemented it for Courtney Casey. Both girls, this is like the same thing as before. These fighters fight 10 times. This fight, who knows what happens.
Yeah, it's 50-50 for sure. For sure. But guess what? There is never going to be one of those riveting knockouts in this fight at all. I feel like both of these women ate each other's best punch and just kept walking forward. And that's pretty much what it turned into.
Yeah, it was a stalemate.
Totally. Then we went to the co-main event. Dirtiest split of the night. Ended up favoring, for me, I had Johnson against Feely. Even though Feely paid off his money DK-wise, I ended up picking on that Velocity Vector, what's that site?
Verdict.
Verdict. I ended up having two rounds for against one to Michael Johnson, but Johnson ended up getting 29-28 over Feely. Feely did get a 30-27 in there, split decision. I thought Feely did enough with the takedowns, did enough with the strikes, neutralized enough of the fight to win the first and third. I did think it was controversial. It benefited me, but for me, Andre Feely won that fight.
I agree everywhere. Like, or I think I had first and third as well.
That's,
for Feely.
Yep. Yep.
And I thought he did enough to pull it out. It was really close. That
the takedown cemented
so
it.
So upset. I think Feely won that fight as well. He's just looking a little better and better. And Michael Johnson's hit a roadblock. That might have been a mercy give for Michael Johnson, just because he tends to put on exciting fights when he's in there, and he can't be on this like 5-5 losing streak in the UFC. Be like, and let's keep building up, amping for this guy.
Totally.
Yeah, Feely, I think he won the fight as well. Even though it benefited me because I had Michael Johnson to win, I agree with you.
So, those takedowns, though, for Feely, on point. One thing you were mentioning, though, in the fight that I remember was the way Feely was opening his mouth. Do you remember the way he was holding it flat open and kind of gas? Yeah.
Like, with his, he wasn't biting down on his mouthpiece. He was, like, showing his mouthpiece. Like,
I feel like we've seen a couple other guys do this. Is it a relaxing thing? Are these guys, is it a way to keep these, because a clenched jaw wears you out, just like if you were really tensed running the whole time. Is it one of those things? And I was watching one of those, I want to say, what is that show where the kids dress up? The Toddlers in Tiaras. But it wasn't that. It was a BBC show on the mothers and the life of it. And like, where are they now? And the kids, and one of them was an educated, whatever, classy girl. The other one was an Alabama hussy who was like, I'm still going for crowns. But either way, they relaxed their mouth by turning away from the crowd so that they could smile for minutes more. And that was their secret advantage against most other kids. Is that what Andre Feely's doing? He's relaxing his jaw at that point in time?
I know. I don't know. Maybe.
There's other guys that have done this that you've specifically pointed this out to me, where I'm like, we need to look at this and see if they're coming from the same camp, and then see if there's a method to the madness.
They're all alpha male? Exactly. Because I think the other guy I called out was Cody Garbrandt.
That's what I'm thinking too. But it makes sense, because like, if you're clenching your jaw, you're draining that gas tank. But if you relax, you let everything relax for a second, okay, you're a little balanced.
Yeah, and you almost, if you clench your jaw at the time of impact, the same way you
clench
your gut at the time you're waiting for a,
you know, when you're
going to
engage.
Yeah, but, and it's the ones, they always say, it's all the hits that you don't see that get you. So you might as well stay relaxed. So, interesting.
That be conspiracy coming right at you.
Alpha male open mouth technique.
So, the main event ended up coming through. We had James Vick versus Justin, the highlight, Gaethje. This only went about a minute 30 seconds. James Vick pulling his head straight back, as I was alluding to. Wasn't thinking it was going to be that big of a problem, but
holy shit.
The damage did not matter at all. James Vick looked like a tall man. He looked like Slender Man in there, going right to sleep. Night-night, one overhand right, and it was over. Cross left for Gaethje, overhand right, cleaned him all up. For Vick, don't lose too much credibility. It's his second loss ever. The only other one being to Beneil Dariush in the UFC, and that's it. Justin Gaethje needed that win badly. Badly, badly. He's going to give him a couple other fights. And do you think Justin Gaethje fights in another 4 to 3 months? Because he took zero damage in this fight.
Well, I think the smart thing, if what the UFC is doing is always for their main and co-mains having this new backup thing.
Totally.
And I do like the way we talked about Pettis before with Tony Ferguson and that being on 229. So if somebody falls out of Conor and Khabib, I ain't mad if Tony steps in. To me, that is the only suitable thing that would actually not just make me want to melt out of the chair.
What? So you're telling me that Paul Felder coming right off of the announcement booth isn't okay to fight Khabib on a day's fucking notice?
I know, like, hey, what is that? Can we stop calling out the guys?
Felder all night long, right?
No. But I think Justin Gaethje, if he were to get a fight on 230, so he could be the backup for Nate versus...
I love that.
What's his head.
Pettis?
Poirier.
Oh, yeah.
That would.
I love all
but
that.
Poirier did just murk Gaethje.
We got a lot of fun bouts coming along. There's a lot more fun fight announcements coming up.
What about Gaethje Kevin Lee?
That's a hell of a fight.
That's a perfect fight.
That's a perfect fight.
Kevin Lee's been calling out that he wants to get on.
And that keeps them all in that top eight.
Kevin Lee wants to get on 229 so bad he's been talking about it.
Gaethje Kevin Lee on 229?
Yeah, that's perfect.
Talk about another midnight shower.
And you were just saying it. Gaethje took zero damage in that fight.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. I think that gives him the immediate turnaround.
Kevin Lee's been talking shit about Gaethje. It's a kind of a good talk shit for 2-2.
I love that bout.
I think that's what we need to start. We need to start petitioning that on social media.
Definitely.
So, I don't know what's going to happen Wednesday. I guess we'll have to figure something out for Wednesday since there's not a show, but we will come at
you. You know we got that quality content. It ain't easy being cheesy, but here we are.
Yeah, that's it. So thanks for listening and have a great week.
Let's move to me.
Thanks for listening to Let Be. For all things Lesbo and the Bean, head over to lesboandthebean.com or follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter.